So I'm going to open with a short reading from Richard Dawkins' Unweaving the Rainbow, Science, Delusion and the Appetite for Wonder. We are going to die, and that makes us the lucky ones. Most people are never going to die because they are never going to be born. The potential people who could have been here in my place but who would in fact never see the light of day outnumber the sand grains of Arabia. Certainly those unborn ghosts include greater poets than Keats, scientists greater than Newton. We know this because the set of possible people allowed by our DNA so massively exceeds the set of actual people. In the teeth of these stupefying odds, it is you and I, in our ordinariness, that are here. We privileged few who won the lottery of birth against all odds. How dare we whine at our inevitable return to that prior state from which the vast majority of us have never stirred. So I'm now going to proceed with my main presentation. Can everybody hear okay? This is titled Through the Lens of Wonder. And it's in keeping with the theme of wonder for this month. My angle of wonder is that any sense of wonder that we have may not come from the object of our wonderment, but from how our viewpoint of experience makes adjustment with its wonderment lens. In Brave New Worlds, the Oxford Dictionary of Science Fiction, the term sense of wonder is defined as follows. A feeling of awakening or awe triggered by an expansion of one's awareness of what is possible, or by a confrontation with the vastness of space and time as brought on by reading science fiction. With my thoughts surrounding this presentation inspired by ideas of lenses, times, and time and space, I could not help but be drawn towards Immanuel Kant and his thoughts on time and space as a lens through which we view the world. The most succinct quote from Kant that I could find on this concept was this one. Space and time are the framework within which the mind is constrained to construct its experience of reality. Now, just to reassure everybody, this isn't going to be an explanation of Kantian categories. It's purely going to relate to how the perception of time, space and time in this example, inspired me to think about how my lens of wonder has been shaped by experience. So here's a brief romp through some of the things that have helped shape my lens of wonder. This obviously isn't a totally inclusive list. This is just the edited highlights of the things throughout my life that have buffed up that sense of wonder. So first up is a TV program from 1978 called Burke's Connections. Now, James Burke created, wrote and presented a 10-episode documentary television series. It took an interdisciplinary approach to the history of science and invention and demonstrated how various discoveries, scientific achievements and historical world events were built from one another successively in this sort of interconnected way to bring about particular aspects of modern technology. I think it was James Burke's enthusiastic presentation and his dry humour, the historical reenactments and the working models that sort of struck a chord with me. And I think very much how this sort of series inspired me and my interest in science. I so wanted to be an inventor back then, and probably unconsciously still do. Years later, the success of the series caused syndications, and there's been now two sequels, one in 1994, which was Connections 2, and one in 97, Connections 3. Next up, we have the wonderful images from the Hubble Space Telescope. It's actually not just the images themselves, but the whole technology that makes that thing happen. anything I can ever say or do to actually will never do it justice. So a bit of a cop-out here, and my piece of advice is, if you haven't already, go online, have a look at the wonderful images that have come down from the Hubble Space Telescope, and read the Wikipedia article, because there's a whole really interesting background to how it got up there, the sort of technological and engineering things that they had to deal with to do something like that. Next up, we have poetry. My maternal grandmother loved poetry and would regularly recite extracts from memory, which was pretty impressive. A lot of people can't do that now. As a teenager, I would also read poetry to her. At that time, this was going on. I was taking elocution lessons, and we had to learn set pieces. One of these was a smuggler's song by Rudyard Kipling. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that. The following verse created a lot of interesting discussion. 5 and 20 ponies trotting through the dark. Brandy for the parson, baccy for the clerk. Laces for a lady, letters for a spy. Watch the wall, my darling, while the gentlemen go by. Now, for a young and impressionable Rob, my first question was, what is baccy? And I was told my grandfather, it's actually short for tobacco. So I thought, oh, okay, so clerks like tobacco. And later in life, that sort of carried over, and I loved reading extracts from William Blake, particularly Marriage in Heaven and Hell. If the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. And the oft-quoted, and also used in the Tomb Raider film, which is, to see a world in a grain of sand, and a heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. And that's from Aubrey's of Innocence. So the next thing that went on to polish my lens of my work is music. Now, this I could go on for days on. However, there are lots of different points in my life when music has enriched my life, and that's ongoing. But one thing specifically I thought about was a show called The Friday Night Rock Show, hosted by someone called Tommy Vance. I remember tuning into the first time on its first birthday, and this was in 1979. I would have been about 15 at the time, and this was pre-internet days, so there's none of this listen again. Okay, so if you miss that, it's gone forever. You don't get that experience. You can listen to the music, but the experience. And this went on between 10 and midnight, basically. The first birthday of the show was a bit special, and they'd done like a listener's poll. So they got everybody to write in with their favourite rock music. And what's really funny about it is you've got this 2-hour show. So, also bear in mind, at that time, there was a lot of prog rock around, we're talking about pre-80s. So in a 2-hour show, they managed to basically cover 10 songs. That was all they planned. So in the top 10, very quickly, there was Shine On You Crazy Diamond by Pink Floyd, Starship Trooper by Yes, Supper's Ready by Genesis, Stargazer by Rainbow, Smoke on the Water by Deep Purple. In fact, Deep Purple getting twice. Xanadu by Rush, which is excellent. Layla, Derek and the Dominoes. Free Bird by Lynyrd Skynyrd. Child in Time by Deep Purple. And Stairway to Heaven, not surprisingly, by Led Zeppelin. One track on that list, which is number 6, Smoke on the Water, has become the bane of music store owners worldwide. As many an adolescent and middle-aged wannabe Ritchie Blackmore attempts to, possibly incorrectly, recreate the main riff from the song. So if you could just try it. Riffs aside, I think the lyrics are wonderful, and they capture a story. Now, what's wonderful about the lyrics is not the story itself is quite tragic, but the way in which somehow the band managed to get that concept from them into my ear and into my head and create this image, which again sort of buffs up this lens of wonderment. I'm just going to read out one part of the lyric. I'm not going to attempt to sing it either. I could never do Ian Gillan justice, who's the singer of Deep Purple at the time. We all came out to Montreux on the Lake Geneva shoreline to make records with a mobile. We didn't have much time. Frank Zappa and the Mothers were at the best place around, but some stupid with a flare gun burned the place to the ground. Smoke on the water, fire in the sky. So this is basically a story about they go out to... So I straight away learn, oh, Montreux's on the Lake Geneva shoreline. And then it just goes from there, and this place that they were going to use basically burns down. So in my head I have all these wonderful images of like this smoke going out across the water on Lake Geneva. And so those images create a real strong thing in an impressionable mind that helps polish that lens of wonder. My next bit of polishing came through what I call hands-on mathematics. I find mathematics wonderfully aesthetic. I think that what initially attracted me to computer programming, because that's what I spent quite a bit of my life doing, was using computers to solve mathematical problems or to do simulations, even very simple ones. The first time you simply get a computer system from the 70s to print out a number count from 1 to 10, or the first X prime numbers, where X isn't too large, because we're talking about 70s technology here, is just awesome. Even more so if you're using a time-sharing mainframe belonging to the school board, and you have to wait a month for the stuff to come back. And the other thing with hands-on mathematics is the amount of time I spent in my youth amusing myself in a geometric fashion with a compass, a ruler, and an HB pencil. Actually, as I wrote this, and this is no joke, I felt the need to visit Staples and actually buy a tilted graphing table and a graphing calculator. But I figured that I don't think it would escape inventory auditing by Dalek at that time, so I figured, no, probably not a good idea to introduce that into the house. Another area, nature. Something that's always intrigued me about nature, actually, is to do with the Church of England. And that's how many Church of England clergy appear to be botanists. I don't know why that is. I think it's something to do that maybe in the 70s there was a lot less paperwork involved in managing the church. But I bring this up because until I was 11, I went to a local Church of England school, and I remember vividly dissecting flowers and drawing components, and I assume my love of nature was further nurtured by this. And, of course, living on Ashdown Forest out when I was in the UK. So I think that's going to have a major impact on my life, the flora, the fauna. And just to sit in a meadow in England in the summer was one of those many experiences which helped polish up my lens of wonder. And my last thing that helped me polish this is what I term the human spirit. Now, I know for a lot of people the term human spirit can be a bit loaded and it means different things to different people. But here I'm using the phrase human spirit to represent the ability to face uncertainty of the future with curiosity and optimism. In the belief that problems can be solved, differences resolved, I think it's a type of confidence in my fellow human, but also recognition that despite the terrible circumstances that good people find themselves in every day, something powerful inside and also externally, keeps them going for their own and also others' good. In facing uncertainty, I often think of the term dukkha from Buddhism. Often this is translated as suffering, anxiety, stress, or unsatisfactoriness. But I prefer to think of it as how one bears under a weight. I hope you've enjoyed my brief romp through the experience that I've helped shape my lens of wonder, as much as I've enjoyed preparing and delivering this. I'm going to come full circle and end this with a science fiction film quote, and amusing regarding artificial life. So this is from the film Blade Runner. How many people are actually familiar with the film Blade Runner? So a few people. So in this, the dying replicant, so in here replicant is effectively like an artificial human, without going into too much detail. There's a replicant called Roy Batty, who's played by Rutger Hauer. Excellent performance. And he makes this speech to Harrison Ford's character, Deckard, and they're on the top of this building. And he's actually just saved Deckard from falling off the building, which is very strange because Deckard actually has been tasked to kill him and his replicant friends. The words are spoken during a downpour, and it's actually moments before Batty's death. "I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I've watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All of those moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain." Now, if you're familiar with the film, you'll remember that a Nexus 6 replicant only has a 4-year lifespan. So I imagine, experience-wise, Roy has packed an awful lot in. But whether you are Roy or Deckard, all those moments of wonder are your personal perspectives of wonder. And while the object of wonder may exist outside of your personal moment of time, the original experience is unique and ultimately lost in time. So revel in the moment of those extraordinary things of wonder and let them polish that lens of wonder.